Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Talking Super Bowl, and it's Super Bowl number 10 for Tom Brady, as you know, at this stage. There have only been 55 of them, so Brady's about to be in his 10th. The Bucs beat the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, 31 points to 26. They will now face Kansas City Chiefs, who took care of business at home to Buffalo, 38 points to 24, all in 2 weeks' time. At the Bucs' home stadium, by the way, Tara Sullivan of the Boston Globe, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Well, listen, in the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick breakup movie, Bill's in his PJs, he's eating ice cream, Tom is out there, he's having a good time, he's meeting new people, he's moving on. He doesn't think of you guys anymore, you know that? He doesn't even know where Boston is on a map anymore, it's over.
Well, he already said it, I'm never living up north again. And yes, he seems to be having the much better time in this divorce story.
Yeah, I think you were writing about that in the Boston Globe. Brady wins. Like, it's not even about, you know, Belichick, Brady. I mean, like, that discussion's over. It's now Tom Brady versus immortality.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have a wonderful colleague, Dan Shaughnessy, who has been at the Boston Globe for the entirety of his 40-year career. And he wrote, you know, right from the game, Tom Brady won, Belichick nothing. Like, that was, and in the moment, you certainly feel that, and the New England fan feels that, you know, that it was between them directly. But then with the day to reflect, you know, the more I thought about it, especially I did not grow up in the New England market. I've only been at the Globe for 3 years. And for me, I think I'm a little more looking at it in that big picture. And it's not about Tom versus what he's doing right here. To me, it's just Tom versus history. I mean, this is, it's really, it's just something we've never seen at his age. And just the depth of the impact that he was able to have on a new team in such a short time, I just think is unlike anything I've seen.
Yeah, for sure. His performance itself on the field, like, I think we should chat about the impact he may be having on those around him and his aura and what that all brings to a team like the Bucs. But his performance on the field, I'm told, tale of two halves generally by those in the know. Brilliant in the first half, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. He did not have a great half. I mean, at one point, two consecutive passes were thrown for interceptions, and I think it was three in a span of seven passes. One was tipped by the defense and then intercepted, but no matter what, they still count. And so he just, to me, he did maybe look a little tired in the second half, but in the end, it didn't matter, you know. And it's to Green Bay, listen, we could go on about the ins and outs, the X's and O's, we call them, of this game, because Green Bay's coaches, their head coach, Matt LaFleur, who's younger than Brady, might I add, did not coach a great game and should never have chosen to go for a field goal and then giving Brady the ball back with a little over 2 minutes to go, because if there's anything Brady has proven he's great at, it's that moment. Mm. You know, there's many things he's great at, but that is absolutely one of them, which is closing out the game. So as poorly as he had played for a stretch there in the second half, in the end, when the game was on the line, he did what he had to do.
Okay, which is quintessential Brady. What about the impact he's had on the Bucs dressing room and the organization itself? And all of these things I know are a little less easy to measure. There's no obvious metric for that.
Right. There is no quantifying it, except, you know what quantifies it? The Bucs being in the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in more than 10 years. And it's amazing to hear his other players talk. I'm sorry, my cat just walked across the screen, but I apologize for that. Listening to the players in his locker room, you really do believe in that expression about the rising tide lifting all ships, because yeah, Brady's experience, his wisdom, his work ethic, the time he takes during practice when he would fix maybe a receiver's route doing it wrong, the way he's able to communicate with the guys what he's seeing on the field, so then they start to see it the same way, which obviously, you know, transfers onto the field itself. The work ethic, the showing up, the attention to detail, like, Tampa Bay was the least penalized team on offense in the NFL this year. And that's a really telling stat, because Brady was like that in New England. They played smart. They didn't give you the game. They made you earn it. And I think that part of him has really rubbed off on the guys around him.
Wow. It's amazingly impressive, isn't it? I mean, it's just...
It really is. I said, and I've been covering sports for 25 years, and I'm hard-pressed to think of something like this. I mean, Peyton Manning, you know, who's a Hall of Fame quarterback and will be in the Hall of Fame, did win a Super Bowl with a second team, but it was a little bit... It just felt different. It took a few years for him in Denver to really get it going, and then by the time they actually won that Super Bowl, it was really their defense, and he was a bit more carried along on the wave, which is fair. He still earned it, but to me, like, Brady's the one doing the carrying, and it's his first year with them, which I think really just says a lot about who he is, and it silenced a lot of the doubters who wondered if it could translate that quickly. Because really, right, how much time does he really have left? He's 43. So he probably felt the urgency, and he made sure everybody else in the room did too.
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary. And you know, you can imagine all the ancillary benefits of Brady teaching the right route for a runner. One, the runner's now running the right route. But secondly, I mean, if Tom Brady tells you do this, it will imbue you with such a degree of faith in what you're doing that even if what you're doing isn't perfect, it's got to add up into something pretty special. So that's fairly remarkable. The Glazer family I wanted to ask you about. So we saw it's hard to tell them apart, actually. They all look the same. Was it Joel? I don't know. He had a mask on and he was lifting the NFC trophy. They are not popular owners of Manchester United. It was a leveraged buyout and they've taken millions and stuck it in their own back pocket. So Manchester United fans are not fans of the Glazers. How do the Bucks fans feel about the Glazers?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know what? I can't speak to it as well, and I would love if we have another conversation. I'll look into that a little bit for you because, listen, most fans don't like most NFL owners. I mean, that's sort of a given in this country. There are very few who I would term as popular. And it's just because of exactly those same reasons, leveraging everything and, you know, constantly trying to lower salaries or being cheap when it comes to the players. But I haven't heard, like, rumblings that say would be as bad in, you know, Washington, D.C., the Washington football team here, you know, has an ownership group that the fans just cannot stand. So I'd have to look into it, but it's a very good question.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll fire that question again in the future at some stage and we can see. I guess the fact that it's not obvious to you as a kind of neutral observer that they're horrifically unpopular means they're probably somewhere in the ballpark of normal. On Aaron Rodgers then, so... Yeah, he's a really interesting case. And he looked, I mean, if looks could kill and if body language was any suggestion of anything, it was, you know, it's fairly obvious that he's not in a great place. And he did say afterwards that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty over different guys' futures, mine included, was the phrase he used. Rodgers, as I understand it, he's now 37 years of age. He did lead the Packers to that Super Bowl in 2010, but like that is it. That's the only Super Bowl they've gone to and obviously the only one that they've won. And he is an unbelievable talent, a two-time MVP, may win it again this year, league MVP. So there is this, well, here's the question. To what extent is it unfair? But there is this maybe unfair thing hanging over him now of underachiever.
Well, to some degree, it's unfair for any player in that situation to have been to the playoffs as many times as he has and for the numbers he's put up. And like you pointed out, the number of MVPs, it's hard to look at that on the one hand and say underachieved, but we all know that we do measure, you know, the quality of somebody's career, especially quarterbacks in this country. Like there's just this thing about, because the quarterback is just so central to everything and is the face and the main influencer and the heartbeat and the leader, whether they like it or not, you know, of a team, and quarterbacks more than any position are just defined by whether or not they won any championship. And then if they're good, whether they won more than one. So somebody like Rodgers now is sort of in the same company as, you know, Drew Brees, who's also bounced from this playoff with his one Super Bowl and heading toward retirement, or Brett Favre, you know, his predecessor, long time in Green Bay and only getting that one. It does sort of hang there a little bit, you know, unlike a Brady or I'm trying to think, you know, like Mahomes. Now, if Mahomes gets this second one already at this age, like it just, even Eli Manning, who is not really considered, you know, talent-wise at that level with some of the other guys, although I could probably do a dissertation on defense of him. But, you know, the two titles make such an enormous difference. And then for Ben Roethlisberger as well, you know, the two titles makes a big difference. For Philip Rivers, who is going to retire, you know, no titles. It just, it's constantly in the equation with quarterbacks. They cannot escape the shadow of it. And if Rodgers is done in Green Bay, it's certainly going to be unfulfilled potential, no doubt.
And at 37, is it up to him if he's done in Green Bay? Can he pull the plug on this somehow?
I mean, he would have to retire or demand a trade, because I do believe he has at least another year or two on his contract. All of which is possible. If you guys followed, it was a very awkward, weird NFL draft this past time in 2020, because the Packers and this new coach, Matt LaFleur, who's young and wants probably his own team and his image, moved up, worked up their way in the draft, made a trade to draft a quarterback in the first round. And so it's like Brady has his replacement in the room. I mean, Rodgers has his replacement in the room and on the roster, and whether or not he wants to continue, you know, being in a place where maybe he feels like that his replacement is already there, which is a fascinating study, because of course that happened when Brett Favre was there and they drafted Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
So we don't have, you know, there is no answer to that. It's really going to be a fascinating offseason storyline to see if Rodgers addresses it publicly or what happens, because quarterback movement, you know, it is the major issue every NFL offseason. You have these, you know, Deshaun Watson apparently wanting out in Houston. If there's a lot of shuffling, it could be a fascinating offseason based on that. And it's interesting from a Boston Globe perspective, because the Patriots need a quarterback desperately.
Yeah. It's hard not to hear LaFleur and not think of dodgeball. It just, you know.
Fair point.
So Kansas City, then, they are still the team to beat, it seems. Patrick Mahomes is obviously their main man. They're looking to become the first team since the Patriots in 04 to win back-to-back Super Bowls, which instantly establishes them as a great team if they manage to do it. So Mahomes v. Brady, I mean, marketing executives, TV executives, this is beautiful. The script is written. They know how to sell this game 20 times over. Who's working with the better team? I presume Mahomes has got that better batch around him.
Yeah, it's the first time Brady goes into a Super Bowl as an underdog, you know, based on the Las Vegas odds in this country, which is just interesting because he's been there so many times. And, you know, Mahomes has that edge essentially based on being the defending champion anyway. There's so many facets that make it, to me, such a pick'em game. You know, the fact that it's going to be played in Tampa Bay, but then, you know, would seem to tilt it toward the Bucs, but then the Super Bowl is never really a home field situation, because home fans are never the ones who get the tickets anyway. It's always people coming in. But then this year, because of the pandemic, you won't have that many people there anyway. And so that part of it. But the storyline, like you said, could not be better for the script writers of the NFL, because, you know, we all use this expression GOAT, which is the greatest of all time, which is Tom Brady on one side. And then, you know, anybody who farms know that a young goat is a kid, and now you have the kid on the other side who's so young and going for his second already, very much on a path like Brady was on early in his career. I can tell you, I was at the game, it's two Super Bowl runs when the Patriots, or three ago now, I guess, when the Patriots won the AFC Championship game in Kansas City in overtime, because they won the toss, Brady got the ball, scored a touchdown, and Mahomes never got to touch the ball in overtime. And it was just electric. And it's only going to be better, if you ask me, this time around. So I would give the edge to Kansas City, certainly guys like Tyreek Hill, who are just so, so, so fast and such a good weapon. But I've picked against Brady for 2 weeks in a row, and he's shut me up 2 weeks in a row. So yeah. What do I know?
Really, you should have known better. There'll be 22,000, by the way, listeners, if you hadn't heard, at the Super Bowl. And a third of them will be vaccinated healthcare workers who'll be admitted for free, which is a really lovely touch and a nice thought as well.
Yeah, I like that move. That was a good one.
Really good, yeah. The Weeknd is the halftime show?
That's correct, I think, yeah. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention because I'm not there this year. There's not a whole lot of travel in my industry at the moment either. So I will be covering it from home, which is strange and different, but... that used to be one of my favorite press conferences during the week, was with the halftime entertainment person. That was always one I wanted to make sure and get in for, because it was always just so interesting and different.
Yeah. And I see it's on CBS. So that'll be Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. Is there, like, it doesn't seem like there's a more celebrated co-commentator in world sport, certainly American sport, than Tony Romo. Even the other night, the game starts and, like, he tells me exactly what's going to happen. You know, and this is not new. We've talked about this on the show plenty of times before. But geez, it never gets old, Tony Romo predicting the future.
Yeah, he's that first season was particularly amazing. His first season as a commentator, I think, because he'd just come out of meeting rooms and off the, you know, off the field himself. Yeah, he has made that transition. I remember at the time being a little put off because having grown up watching the Giants myself, and I being a big fan of Phil Sims as a commentator, it was really Sims that Romo pushed out. And not that I mean, I get it, but I just remember writing at the time, like, Romo should realize this job is pretty hard. You know, he could do well to do as well as Sims. And there again, boy, did he shut me up. I mean, he made that transition so seamlessly and easily. And, you know, he knows what he's looking at. The quarterbacks just, you know, they see the field like the coaches do. I was going to say that earlier. Bruce Arians, the coach of the Bucs, has literally called Tom Brady an extra coach this year. So when they see the game that way, which Romo did for so many years in Dallas, you know, it really brings a lot to the commentating game. But he is remarkably prescient.
Yeah, and so his level of predicting has dwindled slightly with each passing year, or would that be overstating it? It has.
Yeah, the first year was crazy, nuts. Crazy. Okay. But it has tailed off a little bit. It's a little bit more situational now, where just describing what happened instead of telling us what might happen.
Okay, I guess he's drifted that bit from the game. Still, pretty impressive. Tara, great stuff. We might chat to you around Super Bowl time. Thanks a million.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.